Hey, y'all. Welcome to Traveler's Guide to Venus and Mars with Princess Robin. If you've ever wondered how relationships are approached from another perspective, this is your relationship roadmap. Today, our topic is interracial relationships, and our tour guides are Alex, Chris, Veronica, Kiyoki, and Sharon. Welcome back to the show, everybody. You're all veterans now. Thanks for joining me again. So for all the newbies, the ground rules are as follows. There are no right or wrong answers. Debate is welcome. Keep it clean, keep it real, but most importantly, have fun. So on that note, y'all know the drill. Everybody clink your neighbor. I'm clinking myself tonight. It's kind of a weak little clink, but you do what you gotta do when you're on Zoom. And with that, we'll get started. Okay, so whether or not folks have personal experience, many hold strong feelings about intimate relationships crossing racial lines. Until 1967, the U.S. Supreme Court decision in the landmark civil rights case of Loving versus Virginia, marriage between whites and people of color was illegal in many U.S. states. And though the law no longer prohibits interracial marriage, it remains a hot topic to this day. So tonight we're going to ask ourselves why interracial relationships still evoke such strong opinions one way or another. And so I'm just going to start by opening up the floor. So what? Why do people even care so much at this day and age about interracial dating and marriage? And I'm throwing that question out for anybody to answer. Why do we care? Why is it a thing?
I would say, and this just is just my thinking, coming from the white side to the black, I feel that with race, that there's a change, that maybe the white race could be over in a way because of the whites dating black or married to black. And when you're looking, a lot of the race is mixed. That's just my thinking.
Okay. And that was Alex who spoke. Anybody else have an opinion about why it's still a thing for people?
I know that, at least I've had Mexican men say, I can't believe that you would do this to your own kind. And I'm like, what do you mean my own kind? You know, I'm probably translating it incorrectly, but that's really what it comes down to. It's almost a sense of it's a betrayal. It's betraying, you know, Mexican men for being with someone not Mexican. So as to the why, I don't know. I think this is for us to be married to someone not of our ethnicity, we probably don't see obviously we don't see a problem with it. As to the why, I don't know. I think it's a generational thing. It's also a location thing. I think in the South, It was a lot harder for me. I personally did not experience racism towards myself until I was in Hopewell, Virginia. That was my first time. And that's when, and gotten married, and it was like really, it made me cry. Like, oh my gosh, that was just one time. But other than that, I have never really experienced that.
Okay, so you're saying that some of it might be regionally influenced. Some generations may be more averse and others, you know, more accepting. Okay.
All right. And I also think that there's just like a sense of nationalism around race. So like Asians say, well, we need to marry Asians, and blacks need to marry blacks, and whites need to marry whites. So there's this, that's a large debate, but I can't really speak for the black community. But like in the Filipino community that I'm from, I mean, another issue that is coming up that permeates into the conversation is really just inherently the undercurrent is about anti-blackness. And that has been rooted in the Philippines because of colonialism since the Spaniards came and colonized the Philippines. So that sense of it's like you can marry anybody else, but somebody that's Black has really rooted into the instrument of colorism as a door of access in the Philippines, and that has carried on in the United States, especially when the United States took over the Philippines, and then Filipinos coming here, and then we see that same conversation. So it's, and I can't say I'm overgeneralizing. I mean, I'm overgeneralizing, of course, for all Filipinos, but I mean that's not the case, obviously. But there is that part of the conversation in my country.
You know, that's interesting, Keoki, that you bring that up, because, you know, I'm wondering if it's, you know, obviously Loving versus Virginia, that was a Black female and a white male. And I think the law, if I'm not mistaken, was about whites marrying any people of color. But it sounds like, at least in some communities, it's more accepted for crossing racial lines to some communities over others. Some are more taboo than others. Do you all agree with that?
Yes.
Well, yeah. And for part of, to kind of give context on why I said what I said, because that was said to me by a friend back home in Miami, which, you know, Republic State. And that was his thing, where whites going outside of whites, at some point they felt like they weren't going to be any more pure whites based on, you know, going outside of the white race. So that's why I get, you know, why I got that from. So that was my thinking, just hearing somebody say that. You know, because it's frowned upon, you know, like, okay, Seattle is different race. That's one of the reasons why I like Seattle, love Seattle. And when I moved here, I never left. But just being from Florida, that's how it is. It's almost, you walk down the street and someone see you with a non-white or non-Black, they have something to say.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have to say, though, it's interesting because I recall an experience once when I was in college. I had gone to a parade in Seattle with one of my white colleagues, a male white colleague. We were not romantically attached, but we just happened to go to this event together. And I remember, you know, two or three brothers going down the street ridiculing me, like, I can't believe you, you know, like, what's up with this? And so it reaches even in a region that is so multicultural, like Seattle. You kind of see attitudes pop up all over the place, right? Maybe not as frequently or in the same way, but we're not immune in Seattle. Which, by the way, I'm in Tennessee now, but you know, it is prominent there as well. People's attitudes. And you know, for the record, let's clarify. So I've named everybody who's on the call. And for the listeners, do we all have personal experience with interracial relationships?
Yes.
Well, yes.
Yes.
That would be a yes.
Yes. Myself included. I've been there. So we are all speaking from, you know, a place of experience as well. So let me ask the next question. What do you,
Robin?
Yes?
I was going to add one thing that one experience I've had is where when I was dating somebody of color was their friends actually commenting about, oh, you're now thinking you're better than us because you're dating a white woman. So I've had that experience as well.
Oh, okay.
So a little bit different take on it.
Thank you for raising that, Chris. I was wondering if, let's talk about that a little bit. What are some of the attitudes that people, or things that people express about this? So, you know, there's things that people say to us, or, you know, folks, myths or, you know, assumptions that people have about why racial lines are crossed. Does anybody want to speak to that? Keoki, I saw your hand go up.
I can start because, so like, it's interesting when I kind of gave the history of like the Philippines and anti-Blackness, but Filipino, especially Filipino men, have been living in Black communities for a very long time and also marrying into a lot of Black families here in Seattle. And, you know, Filipinos have been in Louisiana since the 1500s, escaping the Spanish Manila galleon trade route. With that said, even though we've been doing this for a long time and the reach of racism is pretty deep and pocketed, so it even extends into like gender roles. So I noticed that like when my wife and we go out sometimes, guys will either talk to me and say, oh, she must wear the pants at the house.
Oh.
And in the home, and I bet you're pretty passive, huh? Or I bet she makes all the decisions in the home, which really falls, you know, which is also like a betrayal of their own instincts to fall prey to those tropes of what Black women should be, right, in the home, and also what Asian men should be in the home. But these are people who themselves are very like. These are activists and these are people who are knowledgeable and intellectuals, but then you see where the disinformation it influences their still what they think about these interracial relationships. And that's just been my experience and with a couple people. I can't speak, my wife can also speak about personal experiences as well, if she wants to.
Yeah, and I mean, It comes to just so many different things. It could be just little things where, you know, I've had the experience of like what I drive, you know, saying, oh, what you drive, your woman must bought that for you. Or, you know, things like that. So, and I even had an instance not too long ago with Chris where one of my friends, you know, he is good at what he does. So I turned Chris on to do some business with him. And when we were out, he made a comment to me to say, oh, she makes more money than you. You know,
it's an assumption that he made.
Well, yes.
Because she's white.
So the thing was, it's like, You have no clue what I make. So where did you get that from?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I've never went into business with him, but I knew from other people that he do a remarkable job. So, you know, I try to bring him business just like he can bring he has sent business my way for my company. But for him to say that, and when I approached him on this situation, like, okay, now you don't have anything to say. So why would you say that? So I just felt like that was an assumption, being that I'm Black and Chris is white.
Mm-hmm.
And to give context, he had done a refi for me, so he did know my income.
Mm.
That's where Alex is like, you've never done business with me like this. So how would you even know? So why would you make a comment like that?
Yeah. And I've never used you when I bought a home. I never used you. So how do you know what I make? I don't just go around and say I make this or I make that or, you know, whatnot. So, yeah. So,
That was the end of that business relationship. Click your neighbor. Click your neighbor. All right. Veronica, you had your hand raised.
I think for me it was
kick rocks, Alex, right? Veronica,
for me it was the type when I would vent, and two females that would happen to be Black, they would say something like, "Oh, this is why so and so is with you. He can't handle a Black woman."
Oh,
and I would be like, what does that have to do with race? It's, you know, just because I'm not, you know, so aggressive. I'm more catering. And that was the other thing is my mother was very loving, very caring, very nurturing for my father. She was a stay-at-home mom. Mm-hmm. You know, she was. And so she would cook breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And it's a thing where, you know, you serve, that she would serve him. She would serve all of us. You know, it's one of those households where the mom serves herself last. She, you know, it's our culture. That's the way we were raised. So I did the same. And I would always feel a sense of, like, I was supposed to be ashamed of that. Like, I was ridiculed for that, as, like, instead of it being a sense of service, a sense of love, it was made into a sense of something bad, like a sense of servitude almost, versus the loving way that it was supposed to be presented, or just anything. Or this is why, you know, he's not with a Black woman, because we would never tolerate that. That's probably why you're single.
Well, we might get into that in a second, but Sharon, you've been very quiet. I have a question, and I'd like for you to start with this. When people say crazy stuff, how do you respond? How do you respond when someone sticks their foot in their mouth and says something crazy?
Crazy about what?
About your relationship, like they've made an assumption, or they've said something out of pocket. And, you know, let me say too, if y'all if you missed the episode, I did a conversation with Keoki and Sharon that was about lasting love, two episodes. And they actually talked in that episode about what it was like dealing with some of the you know, some of the aversion that family members had, at least initially, about them being in an interracial relationship and marriage. Mm-hmm. And that was a very insightful conversation. So I invite you to go back and listen to the whole episode. But, you know, tell me a little bit about what is the reaction that comes, and, you know, like, and how closely does that mirror what you're feeling inside? Are you monitoring how you're responding, or are you just coming with it? And Sharon, I'm calling on you because you ain't said nothing yet, but I would love to hear from everybody.
I mean,
speak the truth.
Like, to be honest with you, like, we've been in quarantine, so we haven't really been around anybody. You know, it's like there hasn't really been much room for there to be any meddling of any relationships or anything like that. You know, in the past, I would definitely say that I was a little bit more emotional, a little bit more direct, and, you know, in my response and everything. But in retrospect, I think what it really comes down to is just understanding that this man has been with me for 21 years of my adult life, you know.
Clink your neighbor. Yeah, I see some people clapping their hands. It's okay to raise a glass to that. That's to be celebrated, because Keoki is a handful. I know, I used to work with him, but I was like, Sharon must be a good, good woman.
Meditating, patient, and chakras, and balancing.
Saging
to get to this point.
That is a resourceful woman. Okay. I know a lot of things about Ron because I know Keoki.
Yeah.
But there's
I love him.
No experiences before that, though, before quarantine, or like when we're younger, or anything that you could think of?
I mean you can. I just think that what I've learned in being in a relationship, in an interracial relationship, a relationship with you, is that the outside really doesn't matter, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it really doesn't, because the person...
Keoki's like, clink your neighbor. Because I tried to tell Sharon, are you sure? No, just kidding. I'm just kidding. It had nothing to do with the race.
Yeah, like the person that you are going to make a majority of your decisions and your life is going to be with your partner, you know? So,
she never thought she was going to date somebody that was Filipino.
Asian.
She never did. Then she met me. That all changed.
And that was, what did you say, regional? You know, that was because of proximity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, honestly, and it was like everyone in my neighborhood was pretty much Black. I mean, I went to college and I was an athlete, so I was around, if I was an athlete, I was around nothing but Black guys, you know? So it was like, that's what I was accustomed to. And then I just decided, you know what? We're going to switch it up a little bit here.
So I have a question. I'm going to say this.
I have had to switch it up myself on occasion. And I was like, hey, you know, let's just see what else is out there.
Well, I've been a witness to that.
Okay.
I've been on that journey with you.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Out there. Go ahead, Alex.
So the question I had was, when she said that anything else beyond that didn't matter. So 21 years ago, and that in your neighborhood, it was just Blacks. Within your inside, did you ever felt any way, you know, that first time? And, you know, like it comes.
Oh, with him?
Vice versa for both of you guys.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't in my element. It was in his element because I'm originally from Oakland, California. So we didn't really meet in Seattle. And so when I came to Seattle, I was like, wow. it was really a shock to me. Like it was a cultural shock, I think, more to me than, you know, to him. And so we just, yeah.
Well, and you know, Kyogi is very comfortable in the Black community. That's an inside joke between me and Kyogi.
Yeah. Put your hand down, Kyogi. Put your hand down.
I saw his office. It was like the prototype to the Black Museum.
Okay.
Washington.
For me, you know, being in Florida, it's you get teased even from friends or whatnot. And, you know, it wasn't that I had a preference. You know, for me, it's what my eyes see, what that, you know, do I like that person, what that person, you know, does for me. That's what it was, you know, because I mean, I've dated, you know, different from white or Black or Asian or whatever. And it just at that time that what that person made me feel. Cause like now Robin, I don't know if you knew this or not, but I remember when we first moved here and you went to work, but I had to sit there with your mom.
Which let me provide context to any new listeners. Alex is my ex-husband. You probably heard of him on some of the episodes, but he's not so bad as maybe I said. Clink your neighbor. Okay, go ahead. So you had to sit there with my mom.
And the first thing your mom said to me was, Alex, I'm going to tell you, those white women going to be after you.
Oh my God.
That's the first thing your mom said to me when we first moved here.
I feel a little outed that you identified my mother as this person. But, you know, since you said that, Alex, let me put some context out there. My mother was raised in the segregated South, okay? My mom was raised in Vicksburg, Mississippi, in the heart of segregation. And so Seattle has been a whole different world for her. And as you know, Sharon indicated, it is far more accepted in the Seattle area crossing racial lines. And so this was something that was just like mind blowing to my mother. Okay. But yeah. Okay. So she said it to you. We're going to have to Alex.
Well, I didn't take it as like some kind of racial anything. I just took it as, you know, and I did get to see after the fact, you know, once I did go to work, because you remember, you know, when we first moved here, I didn't go to work for, I think, well, like a month. And my job didn't start for like a month. So then you kind of get to see some different things once we moved here. So it wasn't, you know, something racial or, you know, anything like that. But that, you know, with your mom, you know, that's an inside thing too, Robin.
Oh, goodness gracious. We could do a whole show on conversations with my mom. Maybe someday we will. But, but you know, to be honest, we're actually kind of running low on time. And I don't want to get started on something that we can't finish. But are folks able to hang out for a little bit longer? If so, I'd love to continue talking about this topic in a part two for anybody who can stay. But for right now, I think I better go ahead and close it out since we're out of time. And thank all of you for being here with me talking about this today. Alex, Chris, Veronica, Sharon, and Kiyoki. And for all of my jokes, I love you all. And I appreciate you for being here with me tonight. Another person I really love is Kurt Casey Clayton, the show producer and the writer of my theme music. He's not with us tonight, but always with us in spirit. Now you can listen to the show at your leisure by following Traveler's Guide to Venus and Mars with Princess Robin on 8 major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Anchor, and Spotify. So subscribe and support if you like what you hear, and please share your thoughts with us. Remember to follow us on social media. On Facebook, it's Traveler's Guide to Venus and Mars with Princess Robin, and Instagram is @JustPrincessRobin. Thanks so much for joining us. And remember, regardless of what the roadmap says, you've got to follow your own heart. Until next time, smooches!